You are listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends. I'm Phil Hewlett. I thank you for tuning in. This is the talk show where you get nothing but fun, informative, sometimes unexpected conversation about the stories you care about. You'll hear from the experts, authors, and others. And we hope to put a little smile on your face along the way. On today's show, a young college researcher stumbles upon a way to rid the world of malaria and other fatal diseases. But at what cost to the circle of life? Plus, do you have your Black Friday battle gear ready to go? Our retail expert joins us with some survival tips and some great deals to look out for. How are your wine chops? The author of the Wine Bible joins us. And our travel guy talks about Thanksgiving travel without a travel, or while a travel alert, rather, is in place. Let's meet the friends. Not only is she the host of Sweet Life, the podcast, she's the producer of this here program, and she has a life of her own, and on some days probably wishes there were two of her. It's Brooke Peterson.
Hey, Phil. If you've lost your furry best friend, but you have a nice stash of cash, you just might see him again with some help from a new Chinese factory.
And he's busy coating his stomach with a preemptive Thanksgiving layer of Pepto-Bismol. Chris Martin is here.
We're 2 days away from Thanksgiving, and for some reason, hashtag no turkey is what's trending. I'll explain.
If you listen to this program on iTunes, thanks for leaving a comment and a five-star review. Even if you don't listen on iTunes, just go over there and leave a comment and a five-star review. It helps the program by doing that because the folks over at iTunes, in between chomps on a big leg of turkey, I think they're dark meat people over there at iTunes, they will read your five-star review and help out the show, maybe even feature it one of these days, and that would be excellent. More people know about this show, the more in tune you are to what's hip and what's happening and what's now, right? Because you'll be part of the hip crowd. Well, you already are if you listen to this show. Am I right, Chris?
Oh, yeah. You'll become a hipster.
Oh, we have hipster news later, too, to hang in there for. Let's get things started. Hey, Brooke.
Yeah.
Nice to have you on the program once again. So we have friends in China. Is that what you say?
Well, we have lots of friends in China, I hope. But this is regarding a new factory that is being built, supposedly opening early next year, that is meant to clone animals, including your dog.
Really? How about my kitty?
You know, I would assume that because you can clone your dog, you can also do your kitty, but it doesn't mention cats. Who wants cats? I mean, really.
Well, yeah. All right, fine. But China and cats? Okay, I'm not going to go there.
Well, so this factory is originally designed, supposedly that the main point of this is to clone cows, beef, cattle, because of their shortage of in their food supply. So they're hoping to be able to clone eventually up to 1 million cattle a year. It's going to start off supposedly at 100,000. But if you throw in a couple of bucks, you can get your dog at the same time.
Wow. So you get a nice side of beef cloned,
mm-hmm.
except it'll have legs and a face on it, and you get your dog cloned, and everybody's happy. But then when you go to the central government grocery store over in there in China, will they have cloned beef on the label?
Good question. I don't know. They're also talking about racehorses and sniffer dogs, because apparently a good sniffer dog is hard to come by. So you find one, like, this is a great one. We'll make 55,000 of him.
What are they sniffing over there?
A sniffer dog must be what, like a drug dog? It has to be.
Sometimes,
right?
Those sniffer dogs can even sense diseases, like they can sniff cancer in people and stuff like that.
That's a sniffer dog too.
Sometimes, yeah.
Maybe they've just
got special ones.
Maybe they've got dogs that sniff out, you know, the what are you up to kind of situations. You know,
you seem like a nefarious character.
Yeah, what's going on in that little place?
They're a scent with that. Okay.
Yeah.
Don't you think some of these animals might turn out a little bit wonky, though? I mean, is the cloning process so good that you're just going to get a perfect replica of whatever you're trying to clone?
I can't imagine.
I think right now they're having a lot of issues with it. Like there's a really high mortality rate right now, and apparently when these animals don't make it, it's supposedly a fairly painful death. So that's, you know, they have a lot of kinks to work out if they pursue this.
Yeah. All right. Well, interesting stuff. We'll see what happens.
All for that beef. 1 million head of cattle. That is a lot of beef.
Well, there might be
every year.
Might be 2 million if the cloning doesn't go all that right.
Yeah.
You know, two-headed cows. There could be a sheep head coming out of the shoulder of one of those cows.
Right. Yeah. Spend time in research and development.
How about an udder that looks like a dog? A sniffer dog udder. All right, now that's silly.
We've done 550 puppies already for $100,000 a piece.
Wow. And people have that kind of cash.
I guess so. They really, really love their Fido.
Yeah, I guess so. All right, moving on. You remember those commercials back in the day? There was a frying pan and and they'd crack an egg. They'd show you an egg. They'd say, this is your brain. Then they'd show this frying pan with the hot grease and they'd crack the egg and they'd put the egg in the frying pan. This is your brain on crack or on drugs or whatever, right? You remember that?
It was very convincing, that commercial.
Yeah, it was. But we never really talk all that much outside of drinking and driving about the effects on your brain on alcohol, do we?
No, not really. I mean, we all know what it makes us, like, kind of slurry, and we can't walk really well, and we should never drive, and
super
and,
confident,
yeah,
super very talkative.
Like, the beer goggles kick in. Next thing you know, bada bing, bada boom.
twice as attractive.
Yeah. Beer goggles.
But I found this article really breaking it down into what is happening to cause all of that, which I thought was interesting. Well, first of all, of course, with the feeling great, Chris, that you mentioned, it's true. Alcohol will release a little of that special dopamine in the first early stages of those rounds of drinks. Like it says, you know, the first half hour to an hour, you're feeling pretty good, feeling pretty confident. And that's because the dopamine was kicked up. So that explains that. And then all of a sudden, you become a little bit clumsier and you're not reacting to situations very quickly, get a little blurry perhaps. That is due to an increase in a certain transmitter. I'm not going to go into all the scientific details, but a transmitter that inhibits reactions becomes increased. So it takes care of all of those reactions. At the same time, another transmitter is being depressed that is a behavioral inhibitory sensor. So that's why you all of a sudden are dancing on bars.
Yeah.
Or
you go the other way. You get sloppy.
Streaking. Yeah, or you go
sloppy drunk.
Sloppy drunk, yeah.
Yeah.
We all know that friend.
Yeah.
Or have been that person.
Yeah.
Quote unquote.
Yeah.
And then your liver, if we're going to go, when you have a couple of beverages, might you have to hit the loo a couple times?
Oh, the loo? Come on. What are you, British all of a sudden?
We call it the head.
Yeah.
The head. the porcelain god.
Yeah. Excuse me, I got to pollute the bay.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. I like that one.
Yeah, all right.
Well, that's because your liver is working so hard. It's just it's exhausted, and so it can't redirect your water into your body, so it just releases it. So you're just peeing all the time. That's because your liver is so tired.
Oh,
we call that breaking the seal.
Yeah.
Yes. Once the seal is broken, it's all over.
Yeah. Right.
And then you have the dehydration because of this water being released, and then we come to the beer goggles. We all know the beer goggles, and that is because all of a sudden our brains cannot. Have you ever heard of the whole idea that beauty is sometimes attributed to facial symmetry?
How do you even recognize facial symmetry?
You
when
don't.
You're drunk?
Your subconscious.
Well, it's
does.
Completely subconscious, but in your brain, all of a sudden that ability sort of becomes, you know, non-existent.
Yeah.
Which is why suddenly somebody who you would normally think is not very attractive becomes, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
Kind of hot.
Right. Yeah, they're symmetry challenged.
We all have a chance when somebody's been drinking.
Yeah. All right, we should test that out on the show one day. We should just do shots the entire show and then in the second hour parade a bunch of symmetrically challenged people. What is the word I'm looking for?
Symmetrically challenged.
There you go. Symmetrically challenged.
I don't know why I'm correcting you on words.
Well, it's the happy Thanksgiving. Yeah. You know, we have blessings every day to consider. So, we parade those people through and we see who gets hit on and who doesn't.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like this game. Do they all have to be symmetrically challenged?
Well,
or can we get some?
It's
some
like every fifth or sixth one, you know?
Okay.
But you have to go. You have to go through the others first before you get to the good one. But see, you might latch on early.
Latch on.
Yeah. That's what we call it.
I like that one.
If you keep it to just three or four, you should be fine. After four, all bets are off pretty much across the board.
Yeah. All right. Good. You all have plans for Thanksgiving? You're going to chow a bunch of food?
Of course.
That's what Absolutely. We do here. These are first world problems now as to what you're going to eat on Thanksgiving. And apparently, in social media land, People have come up with all sorts of alternatives to turkey, and we're not just talking tofurkey. We're talking about stuff that people who love eating turkey and other types of meat might suggest. And Chris has a nice short, long list of of items that are making their way through the... What's the hashtag, Chris?
Hashtag no turkey, Phil.
Oh, gosh. So these are the true alternatives if you really want a delightful meal on Thanksgiving. And that and a whole lot more coming up in the next segment of Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
Here's a great idea for your next outing, a cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door, and the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com. Welcome back, Phil Hewlett and friends. Brooke, Chris are here. I'm Phil, and you're here. So that makes it a quorum. We can vote, and things will be approved. I move that we go to the next story. And in this case, Chris, what are people eating instead of turkey this year?
All kinds of things. But first of all, I want to say that I can't really relate to this because my family has turkey and has had turkey every year for as long as I've been alive. But
yeah,
there
I'm
are,
with you. I'm yeah, with you. Yeah.
There's a lot of people that don't eat turkey, some of them because they respect all of God's breathing creatures, and those people are vegetarians, and they refuse to eat meat.
Yeah.
Others, just because they don't like turkey. So if you're one of these people, jump on the hashtag no turkey bandwagon that's going on social media, Instagram,
hashtag
Twitter.
No turkey. Okay.
That's right. Many people, besides having vegetarian dishes, obviously, which, Phil, you say you have some vegetarian Thanksgiving as well,
in
right?
In fact, yes. And this week, I will be visiting my sister's house, where she and her husband and their daughter are vegetarians. And there will be, which is interesting. I don't know what the... Brooke, how are you with the Dear Abby kind of stuff? You know,
how do you mean,
well,
Dear Abby?
If here's the question. Dear Brooke. My sister, her husband, and their daughter are vegetarians, and they're hosting Thanksgiving for the family, where there will be about 15 of us there at the event. And out of the group, 12 of us are meat eaters, and the hosts are vegetarians. Is it appropriate to arrive with a meat dish to add to the fare, or
yes,
is that inappropriate?
I think it's appropriate. I mean, I think if the vegetarians are saying they're not going to provide the meat for, you know, 3/4 of the people, I think if they bring it themselves and provide their own meat dishes.
What if their position is that they don't want dead animals,
like meat in their home,
under their roof? Yes.
Oh, well, that's tough.
Then no,
that's
you either respect their household or choose willingly to disrespect their wishes.
Yeah, right.
It does come down to a hardcore decision like that.
I had no idea how disrespectful you were, Brooke, until just now.
Well, I agree with
I'm
her, though.
Vegetarian.
Unless they strictly tell you, hey, we will have no animal products in this house, there shouldn't be anything wrong with feeding the other 12 people that don't mind a little meat.
Yeah, all right. Or you stop at a burger joint on the way and you just grab a cheeseburger, right? Just get a little of that in your belly.
Like a barbecue, they will say, you know, for the vegetarians, bring your, you know, veggie patties if you want something on the grill. And if you bring it yourself, people seem to be pretty okay.
Yeah, but here's the twist, though. It's the vegetarians who are hosting the shindig. So it's a
And it sounds like they're pretty hardcore vegetarians, too. So I don't know. I don't know those people.
Yeah. If you bring meat, they might kill you.
They might. That could be bad. That could be bad.
No, come on. I'm talking about my sister here.
They're usually pretty peaceful people.
Yes.
But other than the vegetarians.
Oh, that's right. Chris, you had a story. Go ahead.
Yes. Some of the other things people are posting about that they will be eating on Thanksgiving, besides turkey, include things like ham, which that one's pretty common, but also baby back ribs, pasta, lasagna, steak, sushi, and one guy even says he has lobster every year for Thanksgiving.
Lobster?
I mean, okay.
Well, you can stuff lobster, can't you?
Yeah, you can stuff it with all kinds of stuff.
Well, there's a pull quote right there. On the next Phil Hewlett and Friends, you could stuff it with all kinds of stuff. If you're in charge of the turkey at your house this year, this might help you out. If you're not, then use this to annoy the person who is by second-guessing everything that they do. These are the 8 common mistakes people make with their Thanksgiving turkey. And I believe we've already made this mistake at the Hewlett household, not thawing the bird out soon enough. A 12 to 16-pound turkey takes 4 days to thaw in the fridge.
What? Really?
Meaning you should have moved it into the fridge from the freezer yesterday.
Like which, it's too late.
Which we did, but we moved it in last night as opposed to in the morning. So we missed a whole 12 hours of thawing. If it's bigger than 12 to 16 pounds, then sooner than that, it might take 5 days. A smaller one, 2 to 3.
Gosh. So what happens if you just sort of let it sit in a sink full of warm water to make up for those 12 hours?
Well, here's the thing. If you did forget, you can still thaw it out in cold water, which takes about 30 minutes per pound. So for a 16 turkey, that's still 8 hours. One more thing. We have more things, more mistakes people make with their turkey. Brining a turkey that's already been brined. Check
What's
the label.
Brine?
That's when you soak it in salt and spices and water and that sort of thing. It actually adds a lot of flavor and makes
like marinating?
It's a little like that, but it's brining. It's more of a salt thing. Check the label. If it says it contains something like 8% water, salt, and spices, you do not need to brine it. Keeping it in the fridge until you're ready to put it in the oven. You should let it sit in a pan at room temperature for about an hour first to help it cook evenly. So that's something that most people probably don't know.
But not at floor level because your dogs will have a heyday.
Exactly. Has that happened at your house?
Oh, yeah.
Turning down the oven when the skin browns too quickly. Once it's in there, you shouldn't mess with the temperature too much, and you can keep the skin from burning by putting aluminum foil over it. You've seen Grandma do that. Basting it while it's in the oven, some people swear by that, but you lose heat every time you open the door and it takes longer to cook. Plus, drowning it in liquid at the bottom of the pan can actually make the skin soggy and dry the meat out. Here, not using a meat thermometer. Do you have one of these, Brooke, a meat thermometer?
I do. I haven't used it in about 6 years, but I do.
A lot of turkeys come with that little red thing that pops up when it's done, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. But they're not that accurate, and a lot of them don't pop up until it hits 180 degrees, which is too hot. The perfect temperature for your bird is really 160 to 165. By the way, this is all from BuzzFeed if you want to check my facts, because I don't know what the heck I'm talking about. Well, carving the turkey as soon as it's out of the oven is a mistake. You should wait about 15 minutes so the juices have time to soak back into the meat. Carving the entire turkey at once is a mistake. It's fine if you're going to eat it all on Thanksgiving, but if you're saving leftovers, they'll dry out in the fridge. So it's better to cut off one of the legs and one of the breasts and put them in the refrigerator whole and then cut slices from there from the carcass of whatever you want. You don't mind me saying carcass when we're talking about the meal, do you?
That's okay.
The carcass somehow doesn't sound tasty, does it?
No, it does not.
That's pretty innocent compared to some of the things you say, Phil.
Is it? Okay. But you try this on Thanksgiving. Hey, Mom, pass me some of that carcass.
There's some people that just chew on the carcass.
Do they?
Yeah, they'll eat the gristle and bones.
Well, the whole bird, minus the head and the thigh and the leg that you just cut off and stuck in the fridge, is the carcass.
Yeah.
The whole thing is.
My grandpa eats the giblets. He's like the neck and the heart and
why
the
not?
Gizzards.
Sure, why not? Well,
my family, when my family's signature menu items is our giblet gravy.
Yeah. Do you draw straws for the heart?
A heart?
Yeah, come on. You got to eat the turkey heart.
It's edible.
What?
Why not?
No.
You don't eat that?
Is that in the giblet gravy?
Yeah, it's in there. The heart's in there.
No, it's not.
It is.
Pshaw.
What's the matter with you? Where do you think the flavor comes from?
You're pulling my turkey leg.
All right, I think the show's over. I just feel like going home and eating some turkey now.
That's it. Call it quits.
Yeah.
I have a tip, though. Can I share?
What's your tip?
Well, a few years ago, I've only ever cooked one turkey in my entire life, and it was a few years ago, and I don't know exactly. I have a guess why it was so good. This was the best turkey I have ever had in my entire life, even though I am the one who made it. I will say that. And I can only attribute it to the fact that after it came out of the oven, I was standing there with some guests in the house, and I guess my social anxiety kind of kicked in or something, and I sort of absentmindedly, nervously started just basting the turkey as I was standing there talking, just constantly over and over and over again.
Yep.
And it was the juiciest, most flavorful turkey I've ever had in my entire life.
Well, see, you swear by the basting then, don't you?
I definitely do.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
All right. Good. Good for you.
There you go. That's my 2 cents.
Thank you.
All right. Big Star Wars fan, Brooke, how about you? Huh?
Yes.
We know that, Chris, you're a big Star Wars fan, right?
I'll see this movie, yeah.
All right. Little Star Wars random fact for you. And this will make you feel old, I think, if you saw the first one. Mark Hamill is now older than Alec Guinness was when he played Obi-Wan in the original Star Wars.
Oh.
Really?
Hamill is now 64.
Wow.
Back then, when Guinness played Obi-Wan, he was 63.
He's held together well, Mark Hamill.
Has he?
He looks all right, yeah.
Didn't he get in a car accident and like hit his face on a hydrant or something like that?
Possibly. Eesh. I think so.
I think he did. And he had reconstructive surgery. Am I mistaken? Maybe I am. Maybe not.
Fact check, Phil.
Yeah, he's got some scars on his face, which makes it more interesting as a stormtrooper, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hey, a college student may have stumbled upon a way to eradicate the planet of diseases like malaria. Can you imagine that? All the people that would live? But his discovery also raises major ethical questions about the potential collateral consequences and what could happen if this technology fell into the hands of evil. I love saying that. The hands of evil. We're going to hear all about this from that student's professor when he joins us next, right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends. Before the break, I alluded to a pretty remarkable scientific discovery, one that could change a lot of things for good. It's a way to manipulate genes in a way that permanently alters, I don't want to get ahead of myself and explain this wrong, so let's bring in Dr. Ethan Beer. He's a biology professor at UC San Diego. Welcome, Professor.
Well, thank you.
I imagine you have a bunch of very bright students doing research at UCSD. Is that right?
Yes, we do.
Okay, good. Now tell us about Valentino Gantz.
Well, Valentino Gantz is a very special one of those bright students at UCSD, and back about this time last year, he came to me with an idea to solve a problem he was working on in terms of doing a comparison of fruit flies, which we work on in the lab, to a very distantly related set of flies on a question that has to do with how their wings evolved, the shape of their wings and how many veins that they have, a problem that was somewhat of an esoteric problem to the general public. It's a kind of important scientific problem, but it was not something that would have garnered mainstream attention in the media at that point. But in the process of working on that, he realized that it was a technically challenging thing to do, and he had this flash of an insight of a genetic device that might be able to solve the problem and make mutations in this distantly related species that could be visible all at once.
Okay, now these mutations then led him to a new discovery, is that right?
Right, and the discovery was basically the idea behind making this genetic device that could copy itself from one chromosome of an individual to the other, and by virtue of that, make both copies of the chromosome, we usually get one from mom, one from dad, identical. And in the case that he was interested in, that would bring forward a mutant characteristic, say a loss of a wing vein or something. He then decided to go ahead and test that. He tested it in fruit flies, of course, and he tested it in the best simple case, which was to change the body color of a fly from its normal dark color to a blonde color.
Now, is this a drive-by mutation, or is this something that's carried on to the generations?
It's carried on from one generation to the next. So that's the thing, is you see this genetic device copies itself from one chromosome to the other, and it does that very, very efficiently in the germline cells, so that if you inherit one copy from mom and one copy from dad, if one of the copies you inherit is this genetic device, it'll transform the other one to the same characteristics so that all of the sperm that are produced by a male or all of the eggs that are produced by a female will carry the same genetic alteration. And so that's referred to as gene drive, and that was the concept for it came in that initial formulation and then in his demonstration that this would work in fruit flies, changing the body color from the normal dark to the yellow color. And now, very most recently, he's adapted this in collaboration with workers from UCI and Tony James's lab to showing that it works with very high efficiency in mosquitoes as well.
Oh, okay. So what are the implications then?
Well, the implications are that we can take a gene cassette that Tony James has spent a long time designing, that if a mosquito carries this gene cassette and it feeds a female, which are the ones that bite you and pass malaria, if a female bites and gets a blood meal, it turns on the expression of these genes that block the propagation of the malarial parasite, so that that mosquito, if it should bite somebody else, would not give that next person malaria. And so when Tony James's group had perfected that genetic device, he speculated at the very end of his most recent paper that if there were a means for distributing such a genetic cassette throughout an insect population, a mosquito population, then this might provide a mechanism for sustainable malaria control. And so when Valentino came up with his idea, showed that it worked in flies, we contacted Tony and we set up this collaboration wherein we took his device and we included it in an element that Valentino designed that is analogous to the one he used in flies, but much bigger. And then Tony James put that thing in his group, injected that into mosquitoes, which they had developed as the first. They were the first lab to develop this transgenesis method, which is much more difficult in mosquitoes than it is in fruit flies. They searched through many, many larvae, 25,000 larvae, and they found two that got the genetic alteration inserted into the genome. And then they characterized those, and they found that once in the genome, it could spread from one individual to the progeny with 99.5% efficiency, and that's compared to a standard genetic characteristic, which of course would only go to 50% of the progeny.
As exciting as this is, and I'm sure your students and most of those researchers and other researchers perhaps you haven't met yet, who take this handoff and run it down the field, have nothing but altruistic motivation to do so. But am I right to be concerned about what could happen if this falls into the hands of evil?
Well, I don't think so, to be honest with you. Most of us who are thinking about this are concerned potentially for applications of technology, for example, to pest control, where the same kinds of strategies can be used. On the other question I think that you have in mind are, you know, are people, you know, who have really bad things in their mind, are they capable of using this technology also to create some kind of monstrous insects or other organisms? My feeling is that although this technology is relatively straightforward to develop it for those types of uses, while not impossible, would be difficult, and there are probably many simpler things that people with ill intent could do than to go in this route. That's my view, and I don't know for sure, of course. It's good for other people to think about it and weigh in on that, but it's not, in my own mind, a great concern.
Right. Okay. So if you were to rate Valentino Gantz's discovery, your student there at UCSD, if you were to rate his discovery on the scale of scientific discoveries in the recent past, where would you put it?
Well, I'm biased, you know. I put it at the very top. I mean, this is by far, you know, and I feel like I've had a lucky scientific career, and, you know, I've had a lab for 25 years. This is by far the most amazing thing I've ever seen and even heard about. So it is, you know, it's one of those very, very magical moments where, you know, you're present at the scene of what I believe to be an incredibly important discovery being made and then translated now, I think very, very importantly, to an organism that is of incredible significance with regard to human health.
You know, where is Valentino today?
He's sitting right next to me.
Oh, can you put him on for a minute? I have a couple questions for him.
I'd be happy to.
Oh, great.
Hi.
Hi, Valentino. This is Phil Hewlett. Nice to talk with you, and congratulations on your discovery.
Thank you.
So what was it like the moment you said, bingo, there it is?
It was quite defining when I came to the lab super early, and I saw those flies, and at the time it was only like one, I think, or two. And then a few hours later, they were all coming out yellow and supporting that this technology was working.
Yeah. Now, it was not lost on me, and perhaps not on others who are listening to this, that the fruit fly offspring were yellow or, let's say, blonde. Do you have any concerns that this could be used someday to create human designer babies or a master race, if you will?
No, that is something that with this technology wouldn't be really a concern, because as it can be used for in the case of mosquitoes, for example, is to spread a gene into a population, and that depends on the generation time of an individual. And in the case of humans, that would be like 20 years. It's something that, you know, would never work.
Have you consulted a trademark attorney or somebody like that who can make sure that your name is applied to this discovery?
No.
There's a hot tip for you today. 10, 15 years from now, when this is relatively routine, they're going to have to call it the Gantz. And if you don't work on that now, somebody else, perhaps Professor Beer, will put their own name on it, and you'll be forgotten. You'll be a footnote in the annals of scientific history. So I think you ought to get right on that, Valentino. What do you say?
Okay.
All right.
I don't know. I'll consult with Ethan.
Sounds good. Put him back on, please. And congratulations again.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right, he's a bright guy, Professor. The future is bright thanks to science and thanks to UCSD and Valentino and the rest of your students there.
And of course, this was done in collaboration with Tony James's lab at UCI, too.
UC Irvine, both in
UC
California.
Irvine. Absolutely.
All right, go team. Dr. Ethan Beer, thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Pretty amazing stuff, isn't it?
You guys lost me at hello.
Your brain. Your brain spins when you hear that stuff. All right, how about something simpler? Are you going to get up early and brave the crowds on Black Friday?
Heck no.
No?
Never
nope.
have, never will.
How about Cyber Monday? You sit at home and do that.
I have much more of a chance of doing that.
Yeah. Well, you have to wonder, because a lot of people do, are the deals and the crowds really worth it? A consumer savings expert from RetailMeNot.com joins us live right here next on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
Here's a great idea for your next outing, a cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door, and the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com. This Friday's a big day. Well, it's the day after Thanksgiving, but we have tradition over at the Hewlett household. It's the day when we all put on bear costumes and tear apart the tents of people camping outside the Best Buy for Black Friday.
That's an interesting tradition you guys have.
Well, we carry that on every every year. Joining us live is the senior editor of the Real Deal blog over at RetailMeNot.com, Trey Bodge. Happy holiday shopping to you.
Same to you.
And it's great to talk with you. Remind people what RetailMeNot.com is, please.
RetailMeNot.com is the largest coupon destination in the country. And so there are, at any given time, hundreds of thousands of coupons on the site from over 50,000 retailers. And there is also a mobile coupons app that you can use from your phone that allows you access to those coupons that you can use right in store.
Love the app. I use it. It's a great deal. Now, Black Friday, just a few days away, and I was kidding about the bear costumes, but that sounds like fun, doesn't it?
That sounds like a great time, a great way to spend Black Friday.
Yeah. Now, how aggressive are retailers being this season for Black Friday?
Very aggressive. And we're seeing an average discount of about 40%, which is very deep. So if you're finding discounts like that on the items on your list, I would definitely go for it.
Yeah. All right. So any tips on how to navigate through the crowds to get what you need? Because I don't know that we worry about how aggressive the Black Friday retailers are. There's some aggressive shoppers out there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and I think it's the days are long gone where we're going to see that kind of throng of people in front of the store and everyone trying to wedge through the door at the same time. Retailers took matters into their own hands a couple of years ago by staggering deals throughout the day. And so that loosens up some of that that crowding that used to happen early in the morning. So that's one thing that consumers can look out for. But how do you take advantage of all of those sales as they're kind of petering in and out throughout the day? I mean, my recommendation would be to definitely sign up for the emails from your favorite Black Friday retailers, like your Walmarts, your Targets, your Macy's, wherever you like to shop on Black Friday. RetailMeNot.com also has newsletters that you can sign up for, so you can kind of strategize how you want to manage your day, because it will be very hectic and crowded no matter what time you go. And of course, you do want to be privy to when those sales that apply to the things on your list actually are.
Are the stores still doing those doorbusters?
Yeah, definitely doorbusters. I mean, we're seeing a lot of very deep discounting, particularly in electronics, which is very common throughout the years. Obviously, as Black Friday has become so popular, we have seen those flat screen TV deals, for instance, and we're definitely seeing some of those. Target in particular has some great flat screen TVs that will be on sale on Black Friday. Hmm. We're also seeing some interesting deals in the cell phone space. Best Buy, for instance, is giving away a $250 gift card with a Samsung phone activation. Oh. So these are the kinds of things that you can keep your eyes peeled for. But again, if you sign up for those emails from those retailers, you can have a sense of what's really going to be happening on that day and then plan accordingly.
Yeah, so is it reasonable to believe that you could walk out with maybe a 45 or a 50-inch TV for a couple $100?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
That's absolutely happening on Black Friday.
Now, you know, what I always forget until the last minute, the very last minute, is the stocking stuffers. And I don't want to pay a lot of money for those, but I don't want junk either. Any suggestions?
Yeah, I'm such a stickler for stocking stuffers. My family and I for many years did a big stocking stuffer evening on Christmas Eve. And what it ended up turning out to be was a stocking full of junk from the dollar store that you would end up throwing in the garbage. And I hate that.
Yeah.
And so I think that stocking stuffers should be something that you choose carefully, something that's, you know, under $15 and of course affordable, but also useful. I just wrote a stocking stuffer gift guide for gifts under $15 that's available on the RetailMeNot blog. There's 26 different options there, men, women, kids, teens as well, which they tend to be a tricky bunch. So made some recommendations there. But yeah, I would definitely take a look at that list if you need some inspiration.
Yeah, because I was thinking, you know what, if you're going to check carefully, that equates to more time spent. And that's something we don't have a lot of. So it's great that you put together that list at retailmenot.com/blog is, I think, the way you get to the Real Deal blog, correct?
That's correct. Yeah. And that's a great point, though. You know, we don't have a lot of time around the holidays. And so if anything, get everyone one thoughtful stocking stuffer gift. Your stocking doesn't have to be overflowing for it to be wonderful and appreciated.
Give us an idea of just one, Trey. What would one good under $15 stocking stuffer be?
Oh, yeah. You know what's so great now, especially for teens and tweens, those, you know, that fussy age and they're very hard to please. There are a lot of really cool kind of things that they can pair with their smart device, which, of course, is the thing that's attached to their hand 24 hours a day, mm-hmm. Like a mobile charger, a Bluetooth speaker. There are items like this that are $15 and below that are still good quality. So those are the kind of gifts that I like to recommend, something that's actually practical and something that they can use, but something that's cool, too.
You know what I always got the teenagers? It was a pack of smokes.
because
the reverse psychology works. Dad, these are sick. What's the matter? And then they'd never smoke. You know, it just works great. Let's talk Cyber Monday, shall we?
Yeah.
Now, this is more my speed. Sit at home and do a bunch of gift buying in a short period of time. But are the deals worth my time?
Yes. I mean, you know, in fact, Cyber Monday does edge out Black Friday just by a little bit. So, you know, Black Friday is about 39% off on average. Cyber Monday is 40% off on average. We do find that a lot of items tend to be discounted even more deeply Cyber Monday and forward as we go closer to the Christmas holiday. So it's another great day. And as you said, you can sit at home in your pajamas and do your ordering. We also find that, you know, a lot of people have to work on Cyber Monday, and RetailMeNot polls around this topic every year. And we typically find 80-85% of employed Americans at work shopping on Cyber Monday. This year, we found it's 95% of employed consumers plan to shop at work on Cyber Monday.
Shop at work. Good. All right. So what do you think? Should we hedge then? Because as you suggest, there may be some better sales later, but should we hedge and buy up on Cyber Monday? You can always return things, I imagine, but the shipping deadline becomes a concern, doesn't it?
Well, it's Cyber Monday. I think you're safe enough. You're going to get your items on time. I mean, the cutoff date for guaranteed shipping for the holidays this year is December 18th. So that's the kind of date to keep in mind if you are more of an online shopper. That's that date that you're definitely taking a chance if you go afterwards. Of course, a lot of e-tailers will be offering expedited shipping, you know, for an additional charge or sometimes free. But until December 18th, you're playing it pretty safe. But to answer your question about whether you should buy on Black Friday or Cyber Monday, I mean, it's kind of like a wild card at this point. My recommendation is make a list and not in your head. Put it on paper, an Excel sheet or a Christmas list app, you know, whatever method you prefer, and stick to your list. And then look for the deals that apply to the items on your list. And if you see a deal that's 40% off plus on Black Friday, take it. Yeah. If you lost a couple percentage points on Cyber Monday, no big deal. But focus on your list and buy according to your list.
All right. Sounds good. RetailMeNot.com. And also look for the RetailMeNot app in the Google Play and the Apple app stores. They're in both of them. And I'm pretty sure they don't have an app store for any other type of phone, right? I mean, just either Google or Apple, right?
Yeah. Google. It's Google Play or the app store.
And they don't have a Fisher-Price app store, right, for those phones.
Not yet, anyway.
Okay, those kids aren't getting apps. And add us. And if you're at the website, just add /blog to the end of the URL, and you'll see The Real Deal blog, and you'll see various people writing, including that article about stocking stuffers written by Trey Bodge, who has been gracious enough to spend 8 or 9 minutes with us on this program. Trey, just a pleasure to speak with you. Happy holidays to you.
Same to you. Always a pleasure.
All right. Thank you, Trey. And so that was good stuff, huh? She knows her stuff.
She sure does. Yeah. Sounds like she's well-versed.
You guys, so now what do you think? You're going to brave the crowds? You're going to stay at home and wait till Monday?
Monday sounds good.
Yeah.
Yeah, ditto.
You know what? I'll tell you the truth.
I don't like crowds.
I think we are almost done with our shopping.
Really?
Yeah.
When you say you mean your wife, right?
Well, I mean, we worked together on it. We went out and did a bunch of things, and then we ordered some things online. But I think here's where the rubber hits the road. We're done with gifts for people outside of our four walls at our house. And so I don't know that we're necessarily done with the gift giving within, you know, the intra-family giving. I'm not sure we're done with that yet.
So the kids can expect more.
Well, they don't know what's wrapped up yet. But, you know, I'm not sure my wife's gotten everything she's going to get for me. And, honey, you don't have to get me a thing. But when she says, honey, you don't have to get me a thing, that means get me something, doesn't it? Is that right,
for
Brooke?
For sure.
Yeah.
Okay. But do you guys give each other wish lists? Or is it kind of just, you know, whatever you think they might want? Some families think it's rude to give wish lists.
Well, I'm not real good at this, but my wife is excellent at it. Over the course of the year, people say, "Oh, I wish I had one of these," and she'll remember that like 9 months later, and all of a sudden, there's the thing that you wish you had in that particular situation, and it's a practical, useful thing.
Well, she's gifted.
I suck at that. I really do.
Me too. Mm-hmm.
Hey, that's it for hour one of the program. Man, it just went by like that. There's so much more to come in the second hour, including, I know you can spot a red or a white, a bottle or a box, but beyond that, how's your wine aptitude? You'll hear from an expert right here on the program. Plus, our travel guy talks Thanksgiving travel, which might be touchy considering the State Department's travel alert. We have those stories and a whole lot more in the second hour of Phil Hewlett and Friends. Coming up next.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
Here's a great idea for your next outing, a cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door, and the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com. You are listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends. This is hour two of the talk show where you get nothing but fun, informative, sometimes unexpected conversation about the stories you care about. You'll hear from the experts, authors, and others, and we hope to put a little smile on your face along the way. Some of the stories we have for you this hour, details on that worldwide travel alert for Americans, and will that keep our travel guy home for the holidays? We have smartphones, smart cars. How about a smart car seat?
And do you love free music? Me too. If you're a fan of this band, be ready to have your hand out. I'm Phil Hewlett. Thanks for listening. Brooke Peterson and Chris Martin are here today. And Brooke, we'll get the hour started with you. And we hear this catchphrase a lot these days, income inequality. Some people want it. Some people wonder why it's a phrase. Other people look for ways to make things more equitable out there when it comes to income. But there's a new story about this and what happens to the folks with the lion's share of the cash when they realize there's inequality, which is an interesting concept. But somebody did a report. Who was it?
Oh, well, it was, you just threw me a curveball. Who did this? The Congressional Budget Office.
Oh, okay. So you could have said some guy down the street handed me a piece of paper.
I just made that up. I totally just. Yeah. But my question to you, though, is if you knew you had a lot more money than so many other people, do you think that would make you give more of it away or hang on to it tighter?
That's an easy answer. Nobody should even hesitate to answer that
question. I mean, you operate as you normally do. I mean, if you are consistently donate to worthy causes, then you continue on that path. Now, I think if you have a lot of money and you all of a sudden decide to hang on to it, it's because there's some kind of crash headed your way and you want to make sure that you survive the crash. I mean, when you have a lot of money, you've got a lot of people advising you as to how to keep that wealth. And without it, let's say you lose all your money, you're not giving it to people anymore. So, you know what I mean?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I would think that if I knew I had a ton of money versus so many other people who didn't, I would think that I'd be more generous. But apparently this study, it was published in the PNAS. I need to look that up, tell you what that means. Says basically that when a person is told that they are living in a state with high inequality, so high inequality, they suddenly give less money than when they were given the idea that they actually had a low inequality and it was more equitable. Somehow or another, they were more generous at that point in time. But when they're told the opposite, suddenly they're like, oh, and their behaviors change.
Why do you think that is?
Well, they surmise. They think that the wealthy people end up feeling more entitled to their money, monetary status.
Oh, you know what? I see. Yeah, I see what happens. Okay, I had to work my butt off to get to where I am today. And all those lazy bastards out there with their hands out who I've been giving money to all this, still, it's not making any amount of change because these people aren't moving up the ladder in any sort of way. And so screw them. I'm going to hang on to this money, and they're going to feel the pain of their own lack of effort ingenuity, or what's the word you would use, Chris?
You just used it.
Ingenuitiveness.
There you go.
Through the holidays in January, come January, February, when they've got nothing because they did nothing, they'll be coming back to me and my charitable organizations. And okay, fine. At that point, maybe I'll decide, yes, I'll start giving again. You think that's what goes on in their brain?
It seems like the only logical reason that that could happen. They also say that people suddenly start getting nervous about the prospective loss of this privilege when they know that there are people around them in such drastic different circumstances. They're like, oh, I better be careful and hang on to this, is what it sounds like they're thinking. And I can see that too.
But I get nervous that it's the Congressional Budget Office that came out with this study, because anytime the government comes out with something, there's some kind of end game attached to it, and you have to worry when...
But I was lying about that. That wasn't the case.
It wasn't. It was the penis? Is that what you said it was? the P-E-N-I-S? Is that what you called it?
It was published in the PNAS.
Oh, PNAS. Okay.
To look up and tell you what that is.
Pew something. I bet it's Pew.
That's a good guess. I'm going to go with you on that one.
Yeah? All right.
But it is suggesting that, you know, as we adjust governmental policies and sort of spread the wealth a little bit and even out taxation and that kind of thing, that might actually encourage wealthier people to give more. It just seems ironic, but that's what they're saying could happen.
That's the spin right there.
That's the spin.
Government guys want to decide who makes how much money.
See?
Yeah.
Trying to grab onto your purse strings, Phil. Don't let him do it.
Yeah.
Don't let him do it.
Don't, you know, it's just remember that the guys who are at the top of the government food chain and want to, you know, have all the say-so as to what's going on, just remember, you know, they might say capitalism is bad, but the truth is that they are the ultimate capitalists. If they can control the competition by controlling all the money and deciding who gets how much, they win at the capitalist game, right?
They
just won Monopoly. They've got all the money, and you have to sit there and wait for them to hand you some on a day when they feel like it. Just remember that. Just remember. When you worship at the altar of big government, that's what happens. I didn't mean to be rude.
No.
Brooke, I would never be rude, would
no.
I?
No,
because there are too many. There are already enough rude people out there.
Well, you know, if maybe you were rude without having it under your control, maybe you couldn't help but be rude.
True. Sometimes it does come in handy, and it puts people in their place, and it saves you some time, and you can move on to more important things.
I thought you were saying it's like genetic or something.
Well,
you can't help it because
study.
It's ingrained into you.
I have all of these studies today. I have a study that says that rude behavior spreads like a disease.
Oh, really?
Yes. And in the past, they've studied rude behavior or negative bad behavior and how it can be contagious. But that's been stuff like, you know, parents beating children and then the children beating their children or an employee emulating their really, you know, crappy boss's behavior. But and that's been sort of a different situation in that, you know, these are really extreme circumstances or you're in a hierarchy status kind of situation.
Yeah.
So this is a new study basically saying that even the really low intensity negative behavior is still contagious and it still can affect a person's behavior without them even realizing it, out of their control.
Wow.
It's not out of their control, but they don't realize it. It's always in your control, your behavior.
Yeah.
They don't realize the effect that somebody else's behavior is having on theirs and how their behavior has been sort of spun negatively as a result of it.
You know, does it seem to you that there are two kinds of rude people? There are the skillfully rude people. They have a surgical skill to just inject in your head some kind of vehement message that they wanted you to hear. I mean, they came up with it like on the spur of the moment. Some people are really skilled at rude,
passive aggressive
at barbs, you know. But then then there's the other group of rude people who are just ignorant.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
and not
which one are you?
Not in command or in control of what it is they're saying at any given moment.
Are you accidentally rude or purposefully rude?
I think I put some purpose into it when there's a need for it. I think I can spin something, but I don't go out there with the intent. I think I give people the benefit of the doubt.
Oh yeah.
And if you bring something to the table that requires that I you know, spin my web around your brain and then you have a whiplash and you don't come back again.
Well, I think that's what Brooke means by it being infectious as well. It's like, well, if you're going to bring your rudeness to me, then I am going to respond with rudeness, thereby, you know, exacerbating the situation. Or that's how it spreads.
But aren't you implying, though, that this, or does this research imply that once I do that, I won't be able to turn off the switch and then I will continue to be rude to the next handful of people that cross my path?
Yeah, well, it does say like this. What it says is that if you observe somebody's, that's another thing. It doesn't have to be behavior toward you. You could be observing somebody being rude to somebody else.
Yeah.
And somewhere in your brain, something gets triggered and you become sensitive to this behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And then next thing you know, you sort of react stronger in that way than you otherwise would have had you not seen it.
By the way, for those of you who think you're not rude or never are rude, just think about yourself when you're driving. And somebody cuts you off.
Oh, that's not fair.
No, it's not, because you're there. Hey, you know what? 30 to 40% of all wine sold in the United States is purchased between September and December. So what better time to talk to one of the most renowned wine experts of our time? Her name is Karen McNeil. She's the author of The Wine Bible, no doubt. I mean, she knows her stuff. And she joins us next here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Ports of Call Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials as well as the South Bay's best champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Ports of Call Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsofcalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. Thanks for tuning in to Phil Hewlett and Friends. Joining us now is the only U.S. winner of every major wine award in the English language. Maybe you'll recognize her from her time as host of the PBS show Wine, Food, and Friends with Karen McNeil. She consults and creates seminars for major corporate clients and naturally lives in Napa Valley, California. She's the author of the book, The Wine Bible, which is now in its second edition, completely revised and updated and available in the store at philhewlettandfriends.com. Karen McNeil, welcome, or should I say cheers?
Hi, Phil.
You've traveled the world tasting wine. Have you kept track of how many you've tasted?
Yes, about 3,000 wines a year for 30 years.
3,000 times 30. Okay, that's like a million, isn't it?
That's a lot of wine, yeah.
All right, it sounds wonderful. And let's set some ground rules here. I know very little about wine. There's red and white, I know that. There's cheap and, well, not cheap. And I do recognize the difference in taste between a good and a bad bottle of wine. But beyond that, I need you and the Wine Bible to educate me. So where do we start?
Well, welcome, Phil, to the real world, because most people are exactly like you.
Oh, good. I'm not alone.
No, of course not. And, you know, I don't know why we all believe that we should be inherently wine experts, because the real purpose of wine is to enjoy it and share it with friends. So it's not critical that you know how to, I don't know, every grape variety, every place. But I bet you do know how to enjoy a good glass of wine, right?
Oh, yeah. I just downed the whole thing in one gulp.
Uh-oh. You really are going to need some lessons then. Because, yeah, you're supposed to drink slowly.
Oh, you are. Okay. Tell you what. Let's make this real easy. And I'm going to be real lazy and consult you on what pairs best with Thanksgiving dinner. The usual stuff. Turkey, stuffing, green beans, yams, cranberry sauce.
So many dishes during Thanksgiving are very different kinds of dishes. The good news there is you can't be perfect about it in a way, right? Because there are so many different flavors going on. And turkey itself is very flexible with wine. You could drink sparkling, you could drink red, you could drink white, rosé. So as a bottom line, what I sometimes do is pair wine with mood instead of worrying about the food. If you like the food and you like the wine, you're probably going to be fine. But I think one of the interesting questions is this a party? Do you have lots of people over? Do you want really casual wine? Is this a more serious dinner with just a few friends and they all know a lot about wine, in which case you might want to take out that bottle you've been saving?
See, that's frightening for me.
Yeah. But as we all know, I mean, mood matters a lot.
And the mood changes as you drink more and more of that bottle of wine, I imagine.
That is true. One of the things that wine pros always do is they serve their greatest wine first.
Oh.
Because by the end of the night...
It all tastes great by the end of the night, doesn't it?
Yes, by the end of the night, it all tastes great.
Now, when I hear you travel the world tasting wine, I think there's a pretty good chance the wine I've tasted came from California, maybe France or Italy. Explain how the location of the orchard changes the characteristics of the wine.
Well, wine is pretty mystical when it comes to this, but every element of the environment, the angle of the sun, the amount of heat, the amount of wind, the type of soil, all of these have a profound influence on the grapes and the final flavor of the wine. No one knows exactly how it works. interestingly enough, and it's not predictive. All we know is that different vineyards produce different characteristics. So it's observable as a phenomenon, but we don't really understand what's operating.
Are there some emerging regions producing surprising results, in your opinion?
Yes. I mean, there really are. Of course, the big three are still France, Italy, and Spain. And those three countries are making as good a wine as they've ever made. But there are all kinds of new places coming online. China is a big one.
China?
Mexico is a big one. India. All of these, what are called New World places, are moving very fast, creating pretty dynamic wine industries of their own.
Well, that's exciting for wine drinkers because now when you walk into that aisle in the grocery store, it's not just one, it's five aisles, and your head spins when you're trying to choose because there are so many options.
Yeah, and you know, one way to deal with all those options is to just choose some place. It could be any place, it doesn't matter, Australia, Spain, any place, and just drink the wines of that place for a few months. And then after you feel like you've got a little bit of a handle on Australia, then, you know, choose another place, Austria or South Africa. And going very slowly like this, you can really systematically learn a huge amount about wine and not confuse yourself in the process.
Talk me through storage. Can I just keep my wine in the fridge or on a shelf until I'm ready to drink it?
You know, in my refrigerator, there are always a few bottles of white ready to go. But generally speaking, it's not a good idea to take wine in and out of a fridge, you know, put it in a warm car, then drink it. So you put it back in a cold fridge, then back out into a warm car. Wine likes constants. So you don't have to have a million-dollar cellar, but it is nice to have it in a pretty cool, dark place. Could be a closet, could be under your house. Could be almost anywhere, as long as it's cool and dark.
What about a half-full bottle? Do you save it, or has cracking it open already begun some process that will ultimately destroy the flavor?
If it's a great wine, the likelihood that it will last another few days is very high. Cheap wines don't usually last very long, but the key here is to open the bottle, pour yourself and a friend a glass, put the cork back in right immediately, right then, and then put it in the refrigerator. And if you do that, it should last a couple of days because cold, as we all know, it's why we all have a refrigerator, right?
Yeah.
Cold inhibits microbial actions.
And those sound tasty. Now, before I let you go, Karen, you've probably gone in and out of all sorts of different opinions along the way over your years of tasting so many wines, 3,000 a year. Do you have a favorite right now?
I cannot have a favorite because it would be like asking someone with a big family to choose their favorite child.
Oh.
I know, but I do drink a glass of sparkling wine or champagne every night because I consider it indispensable to motherhood and the source of all patience.
No kidding.
Yeah.
We'll consult the Wine Bible every chance we get so that we can be a little smarter about this. And thanks to you, Karen McNeil, for putting it together. Again, it's the Wine Bible, the second edition. It's available in the store at philhewlettandfriends.com. And for more information, check out our links page for Karen McNeil. Karen, we should sit down for dinner and a bottle of wine someday.
I'd love that.
It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Yeah, imagine having wine with her, huh?
You know it'd be good wine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm letting her pick. Are you kidding me?
Or if it wasn't good wine, she'd let you know about it.
Oh, right. You imagine the pressure? Hey, I'm having dinner with Karen McNeil.
Yes.
And who's picking
the
wine?
She'd be nice about it, though.
You think so?
Get her a bottle of Barefoot.
No, Asti Spumante. I think that's where I'm going. Think she likes a little Spumante?
No, $2 Chuck?
Yeah. Hey, that's gone up to $3, hasn't it?
Well, it's at least $2.50. Is it $3 now? That's crazy.
I think it is. Hey, I've got a little football tidbit for you. Chris, I know you like the football trivia.
Sure.
Only one pro football team has been playing since the 1800s without taking a single season off.
Indianapolis Colts.
No.
But I think back then it would have been the Baltimore Colts anyway.
Yeah. Well, I mean, all of the teams have moved around cities.
Sure.
A lot of them have.
Raiders.
Raiders,
and
no.
And the Broncos?
Packers, no. Lions,
no.
Bears,
no.
Ravens.
You're in close now.
Dolphins.
Now you're in the bird zone. I'm gonna flip all the cards. It's the Arizona Cardinals, believe it or not.
Wow.
Whoa.
They were founded in Chicago in 1898 and have been playing ever since.
They are playing some great football right now as well.
Yeah.
In the thick of it in the NFC, looking like they might even get a bye out of this whole situation.
No kidding.
Yep.
Wow.
Old Carson Palmer, USC alum, he is spinning the ball to those receivers.
Whew. about time we got somebody different to win the Super Bowl, huh?
Well, he's gonna have to face Tom Brady. So.
Did you say totes?
Yes.
Of course you did. Now, with the State Department restriction on worldwide travel, and we'll get a little more info on that after the break. Does that mean you stay home for the holidays? Well, our travel guy usually hops on a plane for Thanksgiving. In fact, I think he's been doing that for as long as I can remember. And we're going to find out what he plans to do this year because he joins us next right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends. Stay tuned. All right, time to talk a little travel, and if you are in the mood to travel, there's something to consider here from the State Department. Chris, what's the headline today?
The headline is that the U.S. State Department has issued a worldwide travel alert for Americans. They're concerned that terror groups and individuals are planning more attacks after the Paris massacres.
Yeah, all right. So that puts a little crimp in your planning, I would imagine, but who knows? Let's find out for sure. Our travel guy is here, Gary Warner. Hi, Gary.
Well, first of all, I think it's great that they do put these things out, but they are also so broadside of the barn. They put these out pretty often. It's like saying at some point in the next, 100 years, you're going to die.
Yeah. It's actually good for like 100 days, too, Gary. It's not set to expire until end of February next year.
Yeah, end of February, basically. Yeah. So what they're saying is during the holiday season, Don't watch out.
Yeah, watch out. If that's what they're saying. They're not saying don't travel, but they're saying watch out. Now, you usually travel on Thanksgiving, don't you?
I do usually travel on Thanksgiving, because I think Thanksgiving is our most hidebound of holidays. It's this annual ritual of face stuffing and inebriation and family bickering and old, problems come back. And I know some people really do like going on this tour of duty to grandma's house. But, most of us, I think, feel like attendance is mandatory, that you'll get demoted on the Christmas gift list or perhaps even the postmortem swag in the family will. So
yeah.
They go and they do these things. Now, I met my future wife on Thanksgiving at a party in New York. So it's a special day for us. And since then, we have always traveled. This is the first time in 28 years that I'm actually having Thanksgiving at my home.
No
Usually
kidding.
I go somewhere, yeah.
No, why is that? Is it because you're new to the Eugene, Oregon area and you're still kind of getting your sea legs?
Yeah, it's kind of like a little bit of travel ourselves and we're in our own home and things like that. So
yeah.
We have a friend up. My daughter has a friend up from Southern California. So we're gonna have some fun with it. But, over the years, we've gone to Yosemite, to New Orleans, San Francisco, Hawaii, London, Rome. Along the lines of what we've been talking about the last couple of weeks, I took my family to Thanksgiving in Paris in 2005 when there was big riots going on in the city.
Yeah.
And we were able to get inside of the city and had a great time once we were there.
Yeah.
One of my favorite memories is there's a place called Thanksgiving. It's a restaurant that's run by some expatriate Americans in the Marais. And I had ordered a turkey ahead of time. So my four-year-old daughter is holding this small little turkey because it was just for the four of us as we marched through the streets and then down into the metro. And everyone's kind of looking at us with this, obviously wonderfully smelling thing. And we went back to our hotel on the Rue de Rivoli, and the room service brought us mashed potatoes. And we looked out at the Louvre and had a wonderful Thanksgiving.
And thanks for saying mashed potatoes, because that's how I say it. You know, I know the word is potato, but I like saying potatoes. Don't you?
You say potato, and I say potato.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, you're the best guy to ask this question then, because, you know, if you're not going to go to grandma's,
right.
Then the answer to the question, why travel on Thanksgiving, is more than just it's a lot of fun. I mean, you must have some insights and perspective on this that the average person wouldn't, because 28 years of not going to grandma's has got to give you a nice perspective.
Right. Well, first of all, it's a great time for foreign travel because there is no Thanksgiving outside on you know, the last Thursday of November anywhere other than in the United States. Even the Canadians, you know, celebrate it on what's
October.
Columbus Day here. So basically, it's an off-season period. You go to these cities. It's not very expensive. Flights are less expensive. Yes, it's cold and everything like that. But they've pretty much already moved on to the pre-Christmas sale sort of thing. So there's lots of lights and festivals and ice skating and all sorts of great stuff like that. And, you know, we've done things like we went and had Thanksgiving in Plymouth, England, where the Pilgrims left from. And now at the time, there was only one restaurant that had caught on and was serving, you know, Thanksgiving.
You'd think they would have thought of that. That's amazing.
Well, they did. They did finally.
Yeah.
Yeah. It started out as something that for Americans who were like living in London, they could come out and do that. Now, probably because of my article, I think, really.
Oh.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
But there's like five or six restaurants that do it, hotels. But you can go down and see the Plymouth Steps where they went off onto the Nina, the Pina, and the Santa Maria. I'm kidding. the Mayflower and sailed away. And then you can go back and have you know, your Thanksgiving dinner.
Yeah. Don't sell yourself short as a writer.
So you know, it's
fine.
It's a good time of year. And then look, the rest of the places often.
So now, of the 28 places
in New York,
that you visited,
you know, the other thing is
can he hear me?
Is
this thing
on? Exception of New York, which has the Macy's Day Parade, you know, some of the big shopping cities are expensive.
All right, Gary. Hello, Gary.
I can hear you, but here,
All right, fine.
Hello.
That's fine. I just wondered because, you know, maybe I wasn't saying anything of any value, but I do want to know, though, of the 28 places you visited over the years on Thanksgiving, which would you consider the most memorable?
Hawaii. And I did it about five times. There is I've talked to you before about this. There's a large red Craftsman bungalow on the beach at Hanalei. It's where Robert F. Kennedy Jr. had his, you know, honeymoon and everything like that. But or the third, excuse me. Usually I bring another family over, and we have Thanksgiving there, and it's just a great spot. That's my favorite. I enjoy the whole England thing because it's kind of where we started out from, and then. Places, you know, the other thing about Hawaii is great that, you know, I don't think my mom would dig a hole in the backyard and put a turkey in the dirt, cover it with coals, and let it sit there all day long. But that's what they did in one place that I went in Hawaii, and it's an emu oven, and it came out, and the turkey was wonderful. You know, it, like, pulled it off, you know. And then other places like New Orleans, which is a great food town, you know, you get kind of like the variations on everything, you know, and just, you know, the turkey's almost like the side thing. I'm not a big turkey fan. I'm always looking for the other stuff.
I got you. Now, how about next year? Because if you've missed, you're not going to get used to staying home. You're not a homebody. You're going to go someplace next year. Have you talked with the wife and the kids about where you'll go next year?
Yeah, we've talked a lot about Paris again. Just because the family in general has been talking about Paris because of what happened.
Yeah.
We love Paris. My daughter has not been back since she was about six, and she's 14 now. So she would very much like to go. So I think we'll do that again and maybe actually have dinner at the Thanksgiving restaurant. It's a restaurant. We took the turkey out because my daughter was four, and four isn't a great age for sitting for a long time someplace. Yeah. But I think that or maybe Amsterdam, which also has a great tie to the Plymouth story. I'm a historian, so I always like to have kind of a tie in.
Have you warned your daughter about staying away from the guys in black pants and white gloves and striped black and white shirts in France.
Marcel Marceau, the mimes, or
yeah, she should definitely stay away from those, right?
Yeah, she'll stay away from the mimes. Yes. She, you know, at 14, she knows everything. You know, she knows more than I do.
Why? What's wrong with the mimes?
She tells me every day.
They're creeps or what?
Nothing can go well if
they're kind of like the equivalent of clowns in the United States. They're just this thing that's supposedly cute and is really actually kind of irritating. Yeah. But
okay.
Yeah. But you go with the flow. You go with the flow. Next thing you know,
she'll be drinking baguette smoothies. I don't even know
baguette
what that
smoothies.
Means.
Well, you know, when I took my 14-year-old son, when we were in Thanksgiving, into a bar in Rome, I asked, was it okay for him to sit at the bar? And the bartender said, not only is it okay for him to sit at the bar, he can have some wine if
he's 15, yeah. All right, okay. Yep. It doesn't matter what I say, Gary. It will always be a prompt for some interesting story from you, and that's what I love talking about you, why I love talking with you every
week.
That's
why travel is so great. That's where you get the stories of your life.
Have a happy Thanksgiving there at home with your family, and we'll talk with you next week, Gary.
That you too, Phil and Brooke and everybody. Happy Thanksgiving, and it's just been great working with you guys. And we'll close out the year with some good advice for next year.
Sounds good.
Thanks, Gary.
Thank you, Gary.
Take care.
All right. You too. Now, boy, that was good, right?
We did. What did we learn? Gary's not going on. He's not going to leave for Thanksgiving this year.
And we also learned that today he had things that he had to say, regardless of the questions that I had.
Yeah, there was a little bit of a disconnect going on for a second.
That's quite right. I was trying to compliment him that he does write a good article. He's written some great articles over the years.
He's a wordsmith.
He is. All right.
He just had a message he had to get out. That's all.
Yeah. Okay. Coming up next, what's the deal with hipsters? That's all I'm going to say. You won't believe this. That and a whole lot more next in the final segment of this edition of Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Ports of Call Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials as well as the South Bay's best champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Ports of Call Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsofcalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. Here's some of the funniest things mall Santas have heard from kids. One girl said she wanted to pee and then proceeded to do so.
Peed on his lap?
Right on Santa's lap. One kid asked for, quote, wheel marijuana.
Wanted some weed, huh?
Yeah. And a four-year-old asked for a ShamWow.
Cool.
Yeah. Half of us take phone calls on the toilet. 4% of us take selfies while on the toilet. 1% of us take work conference calls on the toilet, and 1% FaceTime while on the toilet.
Wow. Yeah. Brooke, have you ever committed any of those atrocities? No.
She's on the
probably
toilet.
Probably not. She's too demure for that.
Yeah, okay. So, Chris, what's the deal with hipsters? They started growing these Civil War beards, right? And their skinny jeans and all that sort of thing. And so what now?
Well, now they're starting a new trend for the holiday season. They're taking giant bottles of glitter, mixing it with beard oil, and turning their beards into big Christmas bushes.
What?
Yeah, it's fantastic. They're posting their pictures all over Instagram and Twitter. You can check out hashtag glitterbeards if you want to see some of these pictures.
So there's actual glitter in these massive, majestic beards.
I love it.
It's a beard full of glitter. You're really going to love it if you check out the pictures, Brooke. Hashtag glitterbeards.
Yeah.
On it.
It'll blow your mind. Some of these guys are even glittering up their hair and eyebrows to complete the look.
Wow.
It looked like a giant Christmas ornament.
I'm trying to hold down the rage that's building up inside me. When,
why so rageful?
If I see that, I don't know.
Hipsters have a tendency to piss people off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not just for being them, too.
Exactly. Yeah, because they're not necessarily expressing themselves or their individuality. They're expressing a kind of a group movement, a group think kind of thing. There's no individuality in hipsterism.
They look very similar, right?
Yeah, it's like, here comes another hipster. You know, I mean, if you are an individual, people shouldn't be able to tell if you're one thing or another until they get to know you.
Yes, and then they can make a judgment call.
Right.
But these days, people don't have the time to bother with all of that, Phil.
Well, you know how we're supposed to hate stereotypes? It seems like hipsters have embraced the stereotype. And yeah. You could see a hipster come and you can profile them. In fact, the police should probably arrest all of them today.
Hipsters and emo.
Emo was still there? I thought that died.
They might have been replaced by hipsters.
Emu, yeah. The emo. That's how you cook a turkey in Hawaii. We learned that in the last segment. All right. Now, one thing we've talked about on this program, Brooke, is Airbnb. That's where you can kind of travel around the country and sleep on some stranger's couch. Isn't that what that is?
Well, yes and no. I mean, this is great because we talked with a host just a couple weeks ago regarding what's going on in San Francisco with their policies. But what it is basically a home sharing web service where people who need a place to stay can contact normal homeowners like you and me around the country and get really great deals on. And sometimes it's a couch or futon, but often it's a really nice property. It's really great space, great location, you know, really good stuff for, you know, a bit cheaper than a nice hotel or whatever.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's not as quite as shoddy as you might think.
Yeah, but is everything great on the up and up?
Well, you think, and normally what's so great about Airbnb, or has been, is that it's been fairly foolproof, fairly fail-safe. And the problem now is that somebody got fooled real bad. And this is a woman who has a mansion on Airbnb. She's based out of Ojai, which is not too far from Los Angeles, down here up north, about 80 miles or so. She has a mansion on Airbnb and rented it out. It's almost $1,100 a night to rent this home.
Okay.
She comes home and finds all signs of incriminating, disgusting, foul evidence that the people who stayed at her place were not a bunch of girlfriends getting together for a weekend end of summer trip. Turns out,
hookers. I'm guessing hookers.
No? Close. They had apparently a nice film shoot, shall I say?
Oh, porn stars.
Porno.
Yeah, a big old porno was shot there while she was gone. And not only that, but they left the place. I mean, I leave my Motel 6 in better condition than they left this place.
Yeah, and you're not even shooting pornos, are you?
No. Well, certainly not gay.
Well, pornos. Oh, these were gay pornos or lesbian pornos, maybe?
No.
All right, so here's the thing. If I were the lady that owns the Ojai Mansion and I was charging $1,100 a night and I found out that they were going to do a film shoot, quote unquote, I'd feel ripped off and think, well, maybe I should have charged 10 grand a night.
Well, yeah, it sounds like the money she's spending to have the place cleaned up is going to be at least that. There is a lawsuit, mm-hmm. Claims for fraud, of course. Negligence, right. Trespass, and breach of contract. So she's got a big old mess on her hands.
Well, that sounds fun. Airbnb, porno. All right. Brought to you by a lady in Ojai. Now, we all love free music, don't we?
Who doesn't?
Brooke, you love free music?
Well, yeah.
Okay, now who does? We haven't found anybody who doesn't yet, Chris. So why don't bands just hand out their music to everybody for free? We'd love them more that way.
You might remember a story not too long ago where U2 released an album for free, and it didn't go so well for them.
Well, yeah, they didn't.
It was forced upon people.
Yes, it was. It was forced. You're exactly right, Brooke. So what's happening
forced
now?
Forced for free.
Yes.
Well, this band is offering free music, and they're getting a much warmer reception than U2 did. The Foo Fighters, who are a Grammy Award-winning rock band.
Good band.
Just offered free downloads of their new album, Saint Cecilia, for free on their website.
See, offering the download. So, in other words, you decide whether you want the
choose.
Music.
Sure, yeah. It's not forced into your iTunes playlist. Yeah. It's a 5-song EP. They are also asking for donations for the victims and families of the Paris attacks. Considering the final leg of their group's Sonic Highways tour was cut short by the incident.
Yeah, all right.
And they
is
were
that
touched
why they
greatly
release
by
it for free?
Yes, that's part of the reason why. Part of the reason why is to help drum up some extra donations.
How about that? Good guys.
Mm-hmm.
Foo Fighters. 44-year-old guy in the Los Angeles area owns a company called Brius Healthcare Services, B-R-I-U-S. Apparently, it's the largest nursing home provider in California, so he's pretty well off and does a lot of charity work on the side. Anyway, a video of him at an airport in Ireland earlier this month is going around on Facebook because he decided to buy dinner for 400 American troops. He was waiting for a flight when he saw them in the food court about to eat a big brown, brown bag lunches, right? And he thought it wasn't right when all the people around them were eating real dinners. So he went up to their commanding officer and asked if he could buy them all a hot meal. And then he told them they could each spend up to $50 and get whatever they wanted from any restaurant in the airport.
Wow.
Assuming they all took him up on the $50 deal, that's $20,000.
Wow.
But he talked to them afterward and said it was a small price to pay for everything that they do for us.
$50 that's for a nice one-person meal. That's a couple glasses of wine. Yeah. That's pretty great.
20, well, where 20. Did you say it was at?
This was at an airport in Ireland, U.S. troops,
yeah,
American
so
troops, 400 troops.
$50 in an airport, yeah, you're going to get, it's a little bit more expensive.
Yeah, right.
Still. You're not going to get as much for your buck.
And it's the euro out there, too.
Right.
So $50 is 72 euro, something like that, is it not?
Is the exchange rate switched into our direction again? The American dollar is more
that's
valuable
right
now?
No, it's the other way around.
Oh, okay.
So, no, yeah, you're right. So it's like 34 euro
right
for $50.
Yeah.
Oh,
am I
math
right? Yeah. You okay with that, Brooke? You good
no
with it?
No,
right.
I'm not at all.
All right. Hey, that's it for the program. We love your comments. Click contact at philhewlettandfriends.com. We send you happy Thanksgiving greetings, and why don't you send us one on Twitter at Faf Show, P-H-A-F Show. We're on Facebook as well. If you listen to us on iTunes, thanks for leaving the comment and the review. Thanks to our executive producer, Mike Stark, our producer, Brooke Peterson. There she is. Our production assistant, Ryan Hayden, who's at home stuffing his turkey, if you know what I mean. Our theme song is composed and performed by Russ Monson. For Brooke and for Chris and for all of the friends, happy Thanksgiving from us to you. I'm Phil. Can't wait to talk with you next time right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Portsacall Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials as well as the South Bay's best champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsacalldining.com or call 310-833-3553.